Okay, hello and welcome to the 11th Read Comic Podcast.
The 12th.
Read Comics Podcast.
Hey! How you doing?
That was Mike.
Yeah, that was Mike.
This is Marty.
This is Jason.
And as mentioned, I am Mike.
Once again, I am Mike.
So,
it's been a while since our last one. We did our last one on the 6th. It's now the 24th.
And wow. Because you demanded it, we're back.
No one actually cares.
No one demanded it?
No. Why? One demanded it. Although Stevie B has...
Stevie D.
Stevie D?
Yes.
Oh. Our one fan, you screwed up.
He gave us
on our blog a couple times.
And he gave us an iTunes review.
Ooh.
Yes.
What did he give us?
He said we're great. 5 stars.
Yep. Right there with Mike's review.
It's not my review.
Uh-huh. So hey, anyway...
I didn't see a review from you.
I can't review it. It's my own account that posted it to begin with.
Well, where's Florence's review? There's Jason's review.
Yeah, I know. I think I must have an account on iTunes. I bought something. But I never buy stuff on iTunes.
Go there
for
free
what?
Downloads.
I didn't see the last 2 episodes of Dr. Horrible.
And they're gone?
They're gone now.
Are they?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've only seen the first one.
Well, they're on this computer. We could watch them, except we're recording a podcast right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't your computer multitask?
It probably does. I'm sure we could just go watch them. And then everyone would hear just the sound.
Let's talk about Dr. Horrible, because that's somewhat comic-related.
You can't ruin it for me.
Yeah, Jason hasn't seen it.
Well,
so without spoilers...
You know what? People had their chance.
I will spoil all kinds of stuff for you the next chance I get if you do this.
I don't care. I don't care if I get spoiled about stuff. established already that we are not to be concerned with spoiling stuff for people on the podcast. Otherwise, we could, however,
take into account people who are actually present.
Oh.
Just a thought.
Too much effort.
You did turn off the metronome this time, right?
I did turn off the metronome.
Okay.
That's Mike.
It's not the metronome.
So anyway, yeah, I mean, Dr. Horrible, it was awesome. Did you read the comic?
There was a comic.
There's a comic. It's on Dark Horse's MySpace page.
Oh, is it part of their Dark Horse Presents?
I have no idea.
Because Joss Whedon had another comic on there, on the MySpace page.
Last year. It looks like they have basically, I don't know if they're weekly or what, but they have episodes, and the episode has like 6 different comics in it every week, or every whatever it is.
Yeah, it's Dark Horse Presents.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it was cool.
There was something that you said the other day about Dr. Horrible that I really am baffled at.
What did I say?
You said that you would have enjoyed it better without the songs. And
that's kind of
the point of the thing. Without the songs, you don't have a whole lot there.
Really?
I think it's funny there. But it's clear that it was meant to be a musical. You take the music out and then you just got...
Really? I totally disagree. I think it would have been a great story. It would have been a lot shorter without the music. A lot of times it wouldn't have been anything special. The music didn't forward any of the plot.
Sure it did.
What?
Absolutely.
Name one thing that it forwarded, and that's not a spoiler.
Okay, from the first one, let's see. The introduction of the superhero. What's his name? I can't remember. He totally
Captain
did it in
Hammer.
His song.
Yeah, you might be right. I don't know. I mean, so, yeah.
I mean,
they probably did forward thing. I mean, but it's not like it had to be music for it to... Yeah,
well,
it worked.
Except it was a musical.
Well, which is fine.
Again,
I'm not saying, and
story.
Like I totally enjoyed it, even though it was a musical, which is saying a lot because I really dislike musicals.
Except for the musicals that you like.
Except for the musicals that I like. And
except those would be better without the music.
In this case, they definitely would. But, I mean, I think here's what I dislike about musicals. To me, they all sound the same, and it's not that they're the same music. I totally can see how they're different, but in the same way that a lot of people think classical music all sounds the same, or a lot of people think rap all sounds the same. I mean, I
those
hear musicals as very similar to my ear and not as pleasant as other genres of music. For instance, country also, I can't stand. And, you know, I fully acknowledge that there are good country songs. I do not really want to listen to them.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Anyway.
It's one of the lamest arguments I've ever heard.
Well, it's true,
personal
though.
Taste.
I mean, the musicals do get a bad rap, especially among straight men.
Well,
most straight men say that they don't like musicals, but I can usually come up with 2 to 3 musicals that they like.
Yeah.
Usually, Little Shop of Horrors is one of them.
Oh, yeah. Little Shop of Horrors is awesome.
Generally, 1 or 2 of the Disney ones, like Aladdin.
Yeah.
We
were just talking
even
about
Little Mermaid,
which, honestly, I really like some of the songs from Little Mermaid, which is, you know, even more ridiculous.
How can you hate The Wizard of Oz? I mean, it's The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
You know?
Although, I have to say, as a kid, I loved The Wizard of Oz and hated the music. Could not stand it.
You know, the argument that I hear against musicals, which usually I can buy into, and which is... Shut up. If you hate it so much, shut the fuck up. Which, you know, if you had used this argument against musicals, I'd be a little bit more inclined to accept it, is people find that the music takes them out of the story. It is an unrealistic way of storytelling. You know, you've got dialogue going on, you've got narrative going, and then suddenly you burst into song. That people just don't do that.
Well, and
so,
I do agree with that.
It's definitely a stylistic thing. I mean,
I argue that the world would be better if we did burst into song a little bit more.
Well, you know, Xander thought that in an episode of Buffy.
Oh, yeah?
And it didn't. He called a demon that caused people to burst into song, and it didn't work out so well for him.
We'll see. I've never seen an episode of Buffy. Thanks for
spoiling
it.
You haven't seen the musical?
Thanks for spoiling it for me, Jason. Okay, we're totally talking about episode 2 and 3 now of Dr. Horrible.
What was I going to say? To bring this a little bit back to comics, something that I think would work very well as an opera would be various superhero type things.
Well,
like Batman the Opera.
We've already talked about the Secret Wars on Broadway, remember?
Did we talk about, oh my god.
In that very first episode, with David Hasselhoff as the Beyonder.
No. That would still be awesome. But I'm actually talking about a serious opera with Batman. Batman the Opera.
In Italian?
No, it'd be in English. But,
but that,
it would have Batman, and you'd have the Joker as the villain, most likely.
Or the Penguin.
Well, you'd probably have to have several.
Yeah, why not?
Actually.
Why not?
You know.
We should write this.
Batman the Opera. Okay, where are we going to get to write the music?
Right.
I know tons of people.
Really? Who
yeah.
can write opera?
Maybe.
Can we make it a rock opera?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's not like it has to be, you know,
maybe
like a traditional opera, you know.
You know, I bet you this has been done before, too.
Well, they've made Superman the musical.
Let's do some Googling.
Haven't they done something with using, setting the music from the Prince's soundtrack?
Don't cover your
stage
mouth.
Thing. Oof, sorry. I thought a while back they had done some sort of stage musical set to Prince's Batman music.
Well, I don't know.
That would be cool if they had. I don't know. I downloaded
stop
that
the
recently.
Music. Stop them. Or no,
stop the
press.
Yeah.
Stop
who's
the
that?
Presses.
Vicky
who is
Vale.
That? Vicky Vale.
I want to bust that body. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what motivated you to download that?
I think I was just, like, hearing Bat Dance in my head. And
oh, you downloaded the video?
I downloaded the
soundtrack.
Yes. Soundtrack,
oh, okay.
Yeah, the album.
I
I've got
a
few
couple years, years ago.
You gotta
well.
Do, get the
it wasn't
the
recently.
Cool.
It wasn't because of the movie or anything.
Oh.
It was just like, you know, I just happened to...
How was the music
like 2 months ago or something.
I haven't seen Dark Knight yet. How was the music for Dark Knight?
You know, I didn't notice it,
well,
which is kind of one of those things that, you know, it was probably good, but
it's,
I...
it's typical of a dramatic action film.
Yeah.
You know, the haunting.
I don't even know who did it. Yeah.
I don't know. It could have been done by Danny Elfman. I don't know. But
he does all the other movies.
Except for the ones that DJ John Williams does.
DJ John Williams.
That's a name that Steve came up with.
MC Williams.
For John Williams, considering that, you know, most of what he does is influenced heavily by classical music. So did you guys get this at the movie?
No, I got this at the source. I pulled out the Gotham Times, which the source just had sitting out for free. The cover, it's like, you know, it's like a fake newspaper. It's maybe two pages. It's maybe just one page. Like, it's just folded like a newspaper.
It is one page,
and,
yes.
The headline is Batman, Savior or Menace?
Oh, gee. I wonder where they copied that from.
But there's all kinds of articles in here. It's pretty cool. I haven't actually read any of it. I just read some of the headlines.
Well, the movie itself is very cool. Jason hasn't seen it yet, but I'm sure everyone else in the interverse has.
Yeah.
And what's cool is that the mayor is played by the guy that doesn't die on Lost.
Wow, that's really cool.
No spoilers there.
It's a guy that stays forever young from Lost. I can't remember his name, but he's the guy that wears mascara. So,
okay,
he wears mascara in the Batman movie too. I don't know what it is with him, but
he's just all about facial.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's kind of pretty. So,
I wonder if any of these other non-Batman related articles are interesting at all.
Like, what are some?
Well, this is Gotham, a no-goat zone. Gotham City said goodbye to goats this past Friday when the city council overturned a 100-year-old law allowing residents to raise goats in their backyards. As recently as the 1940s, goats and chickens were common in Gotham neighborhoods, particularly those settled by immigrants who arrived during the Great Wave of the late 19th century.
Okay,
so,
I don't think we need to continue.
Look at my chicken!
Nice.
That masked man took off with my chickens.
Before Batman, it was Chicken Man. Lamb Man.
So I've been reading
Silence of the Bats.
A lot of the Ultimate comics lately.
I'm so sorry.
Getting the Ultimate comics from the library. And
newer stuff or older stuff?
Older stuff. I went back to the beginning. I actually found this website. It's a German website, and it lists all the Marvel comics by publication date. Like, you can pick a year and pick a month and see all the Marvel comics that were published that month.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And so if you wanted to, you could read them all sequentially.
In the order they came out.
In the order they came out.
Oh, my God.
Have you been doing that?
Well, and what I did was I went back and started at the first Ultimate comic was Ultimate Spider-Man number 1. And
what's the premise of Ultimate Comics again?
The Ultimate Comics
is another universe.
It's an alternate universe in the Marvel universe, Marvel publishing
paradigm.
Yes, that they basically relaunched.
Doesn't DC have this exact same bullshit? I mean, DC has
the idea was that the Ultimates wasn't going to be a parallel universe. There weren't going to be crossovers, except there have been crossovers.
Of course.
And they relaunched Spider-Man and the X-Men and Fantastic Four and the Avengers and all these other ones. And it's actually, you know what, Ultimate Spider-Man, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I read the first 13 issues, and I thought it was entertaining. Ultimate X-Men, also, it's as viable as any of the cartoon series.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would say that would be a good comparison for Ultimate X-Men, is looking at the X-Men cartoon series from the 90s.
Because it had its own rules and its
exactly.
own
Exactly. It had
history,
its own, yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
You represent what's wrong with comics today.
What? What are you talking about?
You know what Ultimate Comics is? It's the epitome of lazy storytelling.
Why?
Because here's the point of the Ultimate Universe. Let's take stories that already exist, characters that have been created already, and put a twist on them. Let's take let's take the wife abuse story from the Avengers involving Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, and update it to the 90s. There's nothing original about that.
I haven't gotten to the Ultimates yet.
But I thought you said
that the Ultimates was good. The Ultimates trade paperback.
I said it was considered. I got the first one because everybody said it was great. I didn't find really anything that spectacular.
Didn't you make me read that even?
You borrowed it because you wanted to. I don't remember pushing it on you.
I thought you pushed it on me. I don't even remember.
I didn't get anything since that.
Did you enjoy What Ifs when they were out?
I never really got into them.
No?
No. Some of them I did, but...
I loved What If. I thought What If was
Found was that the concept, I was intrigued at some of the concepts, but they were lazy stories.
Okay, explain What If. I mean, so it was
what
its own
if
is
like, okay, so what if there would be a, you know, they still do them.
Say,
what if the villains won Secret Wars? What if the X-Men never left
Asgard?
Is it
miniseries or what is it?
It was, What If has been several series. The first one, I think, was in the 70s, and it would have stories that were a what if this happened. Like, what if Captain America didn't get frozen for 40 years?
Yeah.
And thus, you know...
What if he was never found by the Avengers?
What if Spider-Man... what if Uncle Ben never died?
Right.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, one of the, that's... Spider-Man's reason for being was that he didn't save Uncle Ben.
Right.
And so, you know, if Uncle Ben didn't die, would he
what
have...
What happens?
Right. But the Ultimate stories are completely different than what ifs. They don't say, what if this happened, what if this happened. They take the same stories and just retell it.
I disagree with you.
Yeah?
I disagree. How many of them did you read? How many of the Ultimate stories did you read?
Not a whole lot, because I got bored of them.
Okay, I am entertained by them. I've read the first 13 Ultimate Spider-Mans. It has Peter Parker back in high school. And it is. It's telling the same story, but it is... It is updating it, but Amazing Fantasy number 15, which has the origin of Spider-Man, is 8 pages.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah,
they expand it,
they add stuff to it, and they do things that never happened in the original stories, like Peter Parker. I don't know if you consider this a spoiler or not, but I'm going to say it anyway. Peter Parker and Kitty Pryde are dating in...
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. In the Ultimates?
In the Ultimate
Universe. Or at least they were an item. I don't know if they still are, but Colossus is gay in the Ultimate Universe.
I haven't gotten to that part yet. I knew that, but I haven't gotten to that part.
But still, the whole concept behind them remains the same. If they're so, you know, why can't they tell these stories in
regular
universe?
But what was their point in launching the universe? Yeah, don't cover your mouth when you talk.
I didn't know this.
What was their point? Was it to tell new stories that... Because I thought the idea partly was to make a Marvel universe that didn't have 40 years of backstory.
Again, that's lazy.
It is.
Why is the Marvel continuity a hindrance to telling good stories?
Oh, I disagree. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what Marvel fans' argument for DC has been for decades: is that DC's continuity is too vast and there's no way to catch up.
Well, the difference is
Marvel
is a big storyline called Crisis that kind of imploded the whole thing.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, Marvel now has 40 plus years of continuity itself.
It's not the history that's the problem. It's how they handle the history, and the way DC handled the history made it much more difficult for people to, you know, buy into it.
I think that a lot of the stuff they did in the Crisis was pointless. I don't think they needed to get rid of Wonder Woman. I don't think they needed to do a whole bunch of this stuff.
And the thing that Marvel always had over DC was that they didn't have the crisis or didn't have a need for
it. It doesn't.
Crisis.
Well,
now
that's
now,
bullshit
now,
too,
well, now,
because...
now it's now the things that people have been complaining about DC is true for Marvel also, because now you've got all this crap.
Well, and they had it before that. I mean, the X-Men themselves, their history has been convoluted and a vast soap
opera
as well.
Around the time when...
So as much as I want to hear this degenerate to a Marvel versus DC argument...
We're not done yet. Shut up. Go play on your computer over there.
What I'm getting at is that I am enjoying... Maybe they're lazy storytelling.
Yeah.
Maybe they are using stories and giving it a twist. I'm enjoying reading these Ultimate comics.
Okay. I'm not saying that there isn't...
And if you haven't read that many... Then I think
and,
you're not giving
you know, and
that.
After 100 plus issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, yeah, there's going to be some original stories in there, but you know, it's not really Spider-Man though.
Well, is one is a Brand New Day really Spider-Man?
And let's not get into Brand New Day. Brand New Day is one of the biggest complaints I've heard about Brand New Day is that they just turned it into Ultimate Spider-Man.
You know, there are some similarities there. I mean, you have Ultimate Spider-Man, which is Spider-Man in high school. You have Brand New Day, which is swinging single Peter Parker. But again, both of them have been fun reading, you know. And if that's the point, if the point is to be making comics that are fun to read, then I'd say it's a success.
I have a problem with the way they come about it, though. That's basically saying that they couldn't make fun comics to read under the way things had been.
Well, maybe that's true.
Then they're not very talented writers. Sorry.
Well, these are the same writers who write for the regular Marvel Universe. You have Bendis, you have Millar, you have Vaughn. I mean, did you read the Brian K. Vaughn Ultimate X-Men?
A couple of them.
What did you think?
Had a hard time getting into them.
Warren Ellis? Orson Scott Card, actually.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah, he writes Ultimate Iron Man.
Oh, Ultimate Iron Man. Yeah, I actually
you know
read
what,
the first trade of
it. You know why some of these big-name authors start off in the Ultimate Universe? Is because then they don't have to know everything that happened in the Marvel Universe to write
well,
them.
You know, there was a common tenet used in Doctor Who where they would... T-E-N-E-T. Where... they would use the continuity, but not let it get in the way of telling a good story.
Yeah. I mean, they have the luxury of that because it's time travel.
That's true. That's
is
true.
One of the
but you know what?
Main plot
it's
devices.
Comics. There's plenty
it's
of
true,
time travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and for Marvel, that was true up through the 80s. There was no problem telling stories while still acknowledging the continuity that came before it. Then in the 90s and beyond, they just kind of threw that out the window. And
well,
they came up
the...
with the Ultimate Universe by saying, "Let you know, we don't want to deal with continuity anymore. Let's just start something."
But it's not like they canceled all the other ones. They didn't say, okay,
no.
We're going to cancel Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men, and Avengers, and we're going to start them all over again as the Ultimates.
Yeah.
Hi, Florence. Florence just arrived.
Florence just arrived.
That was an echo that you just heard.
Florence just arrived. Florence is here. Say hi to the listening audience, Florence.
Hello.
So, Florence, Ultimate Universe, pro or con?
Con so far, the way it's been executed.
What have you read?
Mike just did a little dance of joy. And
whatever winning. Mike has loaned me with.
The Ultimates.
Yeah, it was just
the
first
ones?
Trade of
oh.
The Ultimates.
It was just, it seemed like it was rewriting things in a more violent way and kind of in ways that undermined the cool parts.
Well, see, and I haven't read the Ultimates yet. I've read...
But that's the one that's really been the
Ultimate
biggest
Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men.
You know,
and just the first
Ultimate
dozen issues of
Iron Man was really interesting until about the end of it, and I was like, okay... Not interesting
really?
Anymore. Yeah, I really disliked it. In fact, I might have even read two, and I know I reviewed them on Read Comics.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Somewhere. Whatever I did read. So, have you on this subject? I want to like kind of move into something that I've read. I just read the Superman Red Son, which
okay.
is kind of a what if.
I've heard the concept of it.
I really liked it. Susie loaned it to us.
Yeah, it was excellent. I mean, it was really good, and like. I mean, you know, not like they ended up kind of toward the end feeling contrived, but up until like probably the midpoint, I would say it was like, you know, its own story. It was very interesting. You know, they had Lex Luthor in it, but they didn't like kind of bring him in as a parallel. It was kind of just like, what would happen if he didn't have Superman to like be, you know, to turn him into a villain. Essentially, he became this like, you know, just like a brilliant scientist, you know.
But
and,
still with, like, an amoral brilliant
scientist. Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
But without, with a different kind of opposition to be against, he ended up sort of by default being pro-good things.
Right. Well, he kind of became, like, I mean, you know, he was just, like, government-funded, and, like, and then, of course, toward the middle of the comic, like, suddenly he decides to put his mind to becoming the president, because that'll further his, you know, goals of having more research money, and then as soon as he's the president, he does all these really good things, but they're really just, like, to, you know, further his goals. Like, he gets rid of the debt, you know, and, like, he... I don't know.
Right, he figures out how to fix the economy is just, like, a mental puzzle that he's capable of, that when it's, you know, convenient for him, he could just take care of.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the idea of Superman raised under a communist nation would be amoral, because, you know, there are certainly plenty of moralistic people that are in communist nations or whatever.
Oh, no. I'm saying Lex was amoral.
Right.
Oh, Lex. Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I misunderstood.
That in his core, he's sort of capable of anything,
okay.
But under these circumstances, he applied himself to good, but not for goodness sake.
Right. And I thought they really... I think what I liked most about the beginning, or what I liked more about the beginning, was that you really didn't know which way they were going to go with it. Like, you know, Russia could have become the good country, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really didn't skew it either way. And then, along, you know, about the middle or so, suddenly Russia really was the bad, you know, the Red Scare, and Superman was, you know, kind of perpetuating the evilness of it. And, you know, they sort of justified that with, in a couple different ways that would be spoilers,
yeah.
But...
as if we haven't spoiled it.
Yeah, I mean, part of it by bringing in Brainiac, and Brainiac had sort of twisted Superman's, you know, moral, you know, outlook, and there was something else, too, that I think I mentioned in my review, but anyway...
I would say, like, one of the things that I really took away from it is it was interesting, but it didn't constrain itself the way the normal title constrains itself. You know?
Right.
Like, they're... Superman's capable of so much, but in the ongoing title, not that I've read it in a long time, maybe I'm thinking the movies, it's not like he single-handedly, you know, changes the whole world. He's kind of within the world and all the normal rules,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, beats bad guys. You know? Whereas in this,
yeah.
he kind of was free to change the whole world, because it wasn't an ongoing title. It was sort of a self-contained... You know, in that sense, it wasn't a completely fair parallel, I think, with him right
yeah.
in the U.S.
See, those kind of what-if style stories I don't really have an issue with, because they tell it brings up a concept that hasn't really been considered before.
Yeah.
Or at least not in print, anyway.
I looked up the what-ifs, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read some titles, because they're pretty interesting. The first one was in December... Oh, I'm sorry. Was in February 1977, and that one was, what if Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four? And then they had... What if the Hulk had the brain of Bruce Banner?
Which has been done in the regular comics anyway. But
oh, really? Yeah.
But that was
yeah.
from 1977, so...
Yeah. And then, what if the Avengers had never been? What if the Invaders had stayed together after World War something?
Two, probably.
Two. What if Captain America and Bucky had both survived World War II? What if the Fantastic Four had different superpowers, which doesn't really...
Yeah.
Like, what superpowers would they have?
There is an interesting one. What if the Marvel bullpen had the powers of the Fantastic Four?
Oh, my God.
And that had Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And who were the other two?
Ditko?
No, I don't think it was Ditko. It was two other people who they were actually in the
John
comic.
John Romita?
No, this was before John Romita.
Really?
There are some of these that I'd really like to read. Like... what if Dr. Doom had become a hero? That's kind of cool.
I think that's been considered before, too.
I mean, in... Well, it was considered in 1980.
Okay. What if Gwen Stacy had lived?
Yeah, they're just kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, again, there were interesting concepts, but many times the story didn't really live up to the concept.
Oh, my God, I really want to read this one. What if the Watcher were a stand-up comedian?
Yeah. There was usually once a year they would have a comedy issue of What If. And it wasn't a full story. It was, like, little one-panel gags. You know, what if Aunt May had powers of various superheroes?
Uh-huh.
Like, Aunt May Man.
Aunt May Man.
Aunt Man May. What was I...
This, and then there's, like, number 38, which just says, What If? Featuring Daredevil and Captain America.
Yeah,
there's no question there.
But that's they, you know, a lot of these have gone over different.
Yeah. One of them was, what if the world knew Daredevil could was blind?
Well, and that that happened later.
Yeah,
yeah. It's interesting.
What was I just going to say? Some of the other things that we've been reading recently that I got this at Wizard World Chicago for a quarter. And enjoyed it a lot, and I actually posted about it on the website, and Marty and Florence read it. It was called Ant-Man's Big Christmas, which was a hoot and a holler.
Yeah, Jason, you should really read it, because it was just so ridiculous.
Who wrote it?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
You recognize the name, I thought, but I don't recall.
It's really just so fucked up. And, like, in an era where I think comics have gotten very dark, you know, I think that's very popular right now, this just, blew me away.
It was published in 1999 under the Marvel Knights line, so it was meant to be a little bit edgier. But it takes everything you know about Christmas stories being wholesome and having lessons and being about family and throws it all out the window and just... tells one really fucked up story.
But, like completely straight, though.
Yeah.
Like, with no acknowledgement of how fucked up it is. Like, as if it's just, like, a story with a happy ending.
Yeah, you get to the end, and you really wonder whether it was meant to be, you know, this is really a happy ending, where after they've tortured every member of this kid's family.
I recall writing in the post, like, hey, Ant-Man, this is how Dr. Doom spends his Christmas. Jason hasn't read it yet because he's the Scrooge of comic book Christmas.
That's right. Bah, humbug. But he's dead. Humbug is dead.
Humbug is dead?
Died in World War Hulk.
Is he another ant size?
Oh, he did in the,
the Heroes for
Heroes
Hire.
For Hire?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Spoilers.
Spoilers
for Heroes for Hire.
It's not a spoiler if the issue came out months ago.
It's not a spoiler if no one cares.
Or even knows who the hero is.
Well, inspired by this one Christmas gem, I read something else we had picked up at the convention, which was like a Authority Christmas special.
Really?
What didn't know was that it was an Authority crossover with Lobo. That I, okay, I've never heard of Lobo.
But the point of the Authority. Wasn't the Authority supposed to be a tongue-in-cheek kind of a parody of superhero comics?
I don't know, but it was the most grotesque... I mean, it's like exactly what, you know, someone who thinks that comics are irredeemably horrible and, like, serve as nothing but violent, masturbatory, like... craziness for 13-year-old boys.
See,
is the Lobo title, apparently.
You mean like a Wolverine Witchblade crossover?
I actually have a great fondness for Lobo ever since he was created in the 80s by Keith Giffen. Do you know who Keith Giffen is? I'm trying to think if there's anything you guys have read.
He does a lot of. Doesn't he do a lot of the Space Age stories?
Yeah, oh, that's right. He wrote Annihilation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he created Lobo, and Lobo, when he was created, was a parody of Wolverine.
Yeah.
And, I think
Florence looks very skeptical.
Well,
so
I'm wondering who wrote
Big
that.
Christmas?
I'll bring it out after the podcast because I don't know if it's representative of Lobo. It's certainly not representative of anything about the Authority, but it was just terrible. And I don't think I made it through it. I think I was like, oh God, why would I read this?
Yeah.
And it was a Christmas issue?
Yeah.
When Lobo came out, he was definitely a parody of, kind of a parody of Wolverine crossed with Superman, because they've had this whole thing about the last member of a race, and Lobo is the last member of his race, but that's because he killed all of them.
You know, it's really funny that Marvel's got all sorts of superheroes that were inspired by DC heroes. You can't name too many DC heroes that were inspired by Marvel heroes.
Well, I don't know that Lobo. I would call Lobo necessarily a hero.
Yeah, but he was inspired by Wolverine, though. I mean,
is
characters.
Wolverine a hero?
Characters.
Yeah, of course. I think he is.
Do heroes kill people?
Maybe.
Depends on what it is. Maybe the Authority does.
Yeah.
And they deserve it, yes.
Well, it stopped my whole crusade for more Authority comics in its tracks temporarily. So I'll get back
Lobo
to it.
Lobo has tainted it.
Yeah.
Another thing that I picked up recently was called The O Positive Men.
Yeah.
Actually, it was the positive issue of The O Positive Men, which I guess is the equivalent of their zero issue. Regular series comes out in December. What did you guys think of it?
I didn't read it.
Jason doesn't read comics anymore. Except for Ultimate Comics.
That's right.
Did you read the Ultimate O Positive Men? Where they're all straight.
You know, you laugh. I've been getting all these Ultimate trades from the library so that I can actually just sit and read them. And right now I have... My bookshelf is like this with Ultimate trades from the library.
Like two feet of them.
2 feet of them, yes. Well, and hey, I'm not paying for them. You know, they're from the library.
I went to the library today, and I got a big comic. I've got the, it's the 49ers. It's top 10 49ers.
Oh.
Which is a prequel.
You know, I don't know if I've actually read all of that one. No, I did. I know I did. I did read it.
I am very excited to read it.
I have a top 10 issue number 1 signed by Gene Ha.
You do?
Which isn't really that special because he shows up to every... convention.
Well,
every convention I've been to.
That's because he lives here.
Yeah, but I know.
He was also at Chicago.
Yeah.
Although I did not see
him.
So
were we.
We were!
What was I?
We could have driven.
When is Jim Lee coming to the source?
In early August, I think.
That's a good question.
I've got my ticket with the number 200 and something.
Oh, that's right. That's in the drawer. Yeah.
Yeah, I have not actually been to the source to pick up comics since before we went to Chicago.
Whoa.
So I probably have a stack.
Well,
especially
you know what,
considering
you're probably
going to
give your
Trinity
to somebody else
on my pole. You know
maybe
what?
They gave
I,
to me.
I really don't care
the
about
thing, the thing that
way.
I want to get signed
I
by him
they would only
would be,
keep them for you for a month.
What, the comics?
Yeah, they only do. They're supposed
oh, really?
To only keep them for a month, yeah.
Well, I know Burl, so maybe they'll have it longer. And I'll go in and I'll look and see what they have this weekend.
The only thing I'd want to get signed by Jim Lee.
Oh, I can.
Not that I don't have tons
maybe
of Jim
go
Lee
tomorrow.
Comics.
Actually, after work. Because I'll work in St. Paul tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I would only want to get signed by him is Alpha Flight number 51 for being his first Marvel work. Which is very un-Jim Lee art.
Yeah, well, it's probably traditional art.
Yeah.
He did the cover of Invincible 51.
Covers.
Really?
Did he?
Yeah, just came out this last
did
week.
Did he do it in the style of Alpha Flight 51?
I have no idea.
It looked like Invincible to me. It didn't look
it,
different.
It looked like Jim Lee, though. If you look at it, it was like, yeah.
You should get the issue. I wonder if there's like...
It's in the,
pull up Alpha Flight number 51. It's in there.
Okay.
So
on the comic book database.
That's right. Bob Gale wrote.
Bob Gale wrote Ant-Man's Big Christmas.
Yes. As well as
gonna...
Back to the Future.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Totally see it, man.
He created Marty McFly.
He
I
did.
Have him to blame for people calling me McFly in junior high.
Oh, no.
McFly, Ant-Man,
yes. I have to say that as far as McFly goes, I like the fact that there's a band named McFly, and they're so hot.
I
oh
am
my
not
God.
A Back to the Future fan, so
You don't like Back to the Future? It was overrated.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I see his opinions on the Ultimate Universe do not
right now. Well, you didn't like... I just think you didn't like movies that were from our childhood.
Oh, I like plenty of movies from our childhood.
You didn't... You also didn't
Who's
like
that?
Heathers.
Oh, that's his little brother. I said I liked Heathers. I said it was overrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's a nice
You know what? Everyone speaks about Heathers as if it's like the second coming or something like that.
It was actually three. There were three Heathers.
You're talking about the movie, not all of them. And it was a good movie, but it wasn't anything really that special.
Anyway, I put out some more things that I've read recently. And a couple of things I'd like to highlight because we got them directly from the artists at the convention. One is The Underbrews, which I got the first four or five issues.
Very cute.
It is. It's very cute. Susie has the
issue. Did you get this?
I think I read the first
issue.
Yeah,
I got it in Artist Alley. And it is by TJ Dort and Joe Haley. And it sounds like it's not necessarily distributed in comic shops, but we can ask the source to get on the pull list. Maybe that will help them.
It would. Rolling Boyle is the publisher.
Yeah, it's black and white. It's cute, but in a more sophisticated, kind of coherent way. Because there's some kind of cutesy anime-like stuff that I really don't like, and I really do like this. It's
Marty, weren't you the one that just recently said, why would you buy a black and white comic?
I bought this one.
I've bought some black and white comics
You
recently.
Told me that at the Dream Haven the other day.
Well, I think I probably, what I did is I picked it up and I said, I would probably buy this, except it's in black and white.
No, I was going to buy...
I make that decision all the time.
I was going to buy a big run of Thieves and Kings, and when he said that they were black and white, I was like, why would you buy a black and white comic?
Oh, no. It was, why would you spend a dollar each on those? Because I was buying comics at the time.
Black and white comics should only be a quarter.
I was buying comics five for a dollar, and he had this giant stack of like 30 of these things.
You know, if we ever do realize our dream of creating a comic, they'll probably be in black and white.
And they'll probably be a quarter.
I'm sure that would pay for itself.
No, because we only sell them at conventions. And
yeah, but Mike will do all the photocopying at Kinko's. So
for as long as I have a job there.
So the other comic that Florence pulled out is this Hereville comic, which is at, I think, Hereville.com. It's Hereville.com, and that's Hereville. And yeah, there's... The cool thing about this, or one of the cooler things about this, is that he finished the comic and then started putting up the comic a page a day. So, or it's not a page a day, it's a page a week. So you can go and, like, you know, get really frustrated that there's only like 20 pages up and say, oh, I want to buy the rest of the story. And you hit buy it now and then you get the rest of the story.
It's really cool.
And how much is it?
Yeah.
It was pretty cheap.
$12.95 is the cover price on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for, I think, twice that, I think it was 15 including shipping, and for twice that, he'll do a full page art in the front, which we got. There's, so yeah.
Cool.
It's kinda,
looks like it's part of the comic.
I know.
I mean, it looks exactly as
it's really
it
a
the
cool
comic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's, you know, personalized to Florence and Marty.
Wow.
And it was a really good story. It's beautiful art on the inside. It's really nicely printed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's smaller than a regular trade paperback. It looks like it's, you know, probably...
It's a digest-sized.
But it's nice, and, like, the art's cool.
Slightly
and...
bigger than digest. It's not like an Archie double digest.
I like the tagline here. Yet another troll-fighting 11-year-old Orthodox Jewish girl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And it's a fun story. It's really good.
Yeah.
I recommend it. And I'm looking forward to more, because presumably there will be more of this story.
I feel like it'd be a really good gift to, like, a girl, you know? That I think it would be a good kid-friendly
it does
story,
have a
but
very,
still interesting
like,
for adults.
Heroic female lead character.
Who's also relatable and not, like, just some, you know, super-powered kid.
Like this old Jewish guy. What's a troll? It's an English word. It means a kind of goish monster.
And on that vein, there's some books that I borrowed recently and read. One is The Curse of the Brambly Hedge, borrowed from Susie. that's kind of more fairy tale-y, and it clearly is really intended for kids, which I didn't fully realize until it ended, and there was like 20 more pages of exercises about, like, make up your own stories about these characters that were kind of tangentially introduced, and there's like writing exercises to try to encourage kids to do their own comics. Yeah, it's like this whole teaching, like a comic that's half story and half trying to get kids into the idea of writing stories and writing comics.
Oh, that is kind of cool.
Yeah.
That makes me want to read it more than when I was just picking it up and flipping through.
Oh, look, there is a prince kissing the princess.
Yes.
Oh, let me, Bramley Hedge. Could it be a little bit something about Sleeping Beauty?
It is exactly Sleeping Beauty. It's not even really a very strange take on it. But the end, I agree, it just totally made me kind of like supporting it more and wanting to give it to a kid.
Put up by Castle Waiting.
Well, Castle Waiting
or
is Oleo. A comic.
Oleo. Okay.
Castle,
Oleo is the publisher.
There's a whole series of Castle Waiting comics.
Hmm,
okay.
I didn't know that.
Are they all like that, I wonder?
I don't know. I know that there's a really thick hardcover at the downtown library for Castle Waiting.
Hmm.
Well, maybe you should check it out next time you're at the library
to
see if it's all like this.
I should.
This came out in 1996.
Oh, wow. It's 11 years old.
12.
So somebody 12. Who was born when it came out now, they'd probably be the right age.
Oh, we did get out the Invincible comic, if anyone has any comments about the Jim Lee cover.
Well, I don't think it's modeled after the Alpha Flight cover.
No, definitely not. It is a little bit more cartoonish than his normal style, too.
Than Jim Lee?
Yeah, it's a little bit more... I don't know.
Cartoonish?
Cartoonish, sure. I wasn't going to finish that phrase.
Okay. So
it's
another
very
thing,
Robin-like right there.
Yeah. We've been kind of engorging ourselves on Warren Ellis since the convention as well, after
That's,
having seen him.
You know you're only supposed to take Warren Ellis in moderation.
Yeah. Well, it's true. Reading too many different of his titles at once makes me realize how many are very similar.
Yeah, he really like writes on some themes and seems to kind of stick to them.
Yeah, like killing the American president is a consistent theme. Which makes his story about being concerned about going through customs a little more relevant.
I think they've got some, he's got some issues from the motherland.
I did just finish my review of all 8 of the Black Summer series last night. And I really dug it, but was a little bit disappointed with the last issue.
Which I have not read yet.
Just came out on Wednesday.
I was reading Transmetropolitan when you were reading it, but I think it was after the 3rd or 4th trade, I actually had to stop. I'm like, I can't read any more of this. It is upsetting me to read it. Kind of in the same way that, you know, Walking Dead was upsetting me to read it. Just because I'm like, I need to read happy, fuzzy comics now.
Yeah, this is why I picked up The Underburbs and Hereville, actually, and the Sleeping Beauty stories, because I read a lot of Warren Ellis and then 4 volumes of Walking Dead.
You read 4 volumes of it?
Over the weekend. I was a little bit of a wreck.
Oh my god. Are you okay?
I couldn't stop, but it was so upsetting. Yeah, I stopped by like 9 o'clock. I finally got cut off, I think, by Marty, so that I could be close to bedtime.
We had
time.
To watch some Doctor Who so that she could unwind.
But I was on the other couch just making more and more sounds of distress and then like getting another volume.
That's because
volume
that's what Walking Dead is. It is people in distress. Nonstop.
And like at the end. Yeah, things just kept coming.
So had you gotten to the part with, I think it's the governor?
No.
No, okay.
Okay.
I
haven't read any of it yet.
Okay.
So, I mean, I also picked up a series called Tech Jacket by Kirkman. So it's another Kirkman.
How was that?
I haven't read it yet, but I also got that for, you know, a quarter each or something. And I've been going through a phase of getting these reprints and translations of
European?
European. I guess I think they're mostly French comic books. And it started with Valerian, which I got from the library. And then, and they've only published one volume, which is, I think, like three, you know, shorter stories in the series. But I guess, like, there are literally, like, you know, dozens of these stories. And I would love to read them. I really like them.
This looks really good. I'm holding Townscapes.
So that's by the same artist, I think, that did Valerian. And it's also three stories. The first one is very short. I'm in the middle of the second one, and then the third one is like half the book, I think. And then I also read Sky Doll, which is actually more current since they've been publishing it in, you know, I forget who it is that's publishing it right
Soleil
now.
Soleil in France, and then it's being republished by Marvel in the U.S.
Yeah. And so there's like a whole series of these Soleil comics that are coming out by Marvel.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really liked Sky Doll, and again, it just made me want to read more. Like, I feel like there's definitely got to be more that happens after that, because it was a three-part miniseries. Each of the comics was really thick. They were a little more pricey, I think. They were like $5 or something. And yeah, there was a lot of story there. But then you get to the end, and yeah, it does end, but it kind of feels like, okay, well, there's definitely a lot more that could happen.
Well, I mean, France has a huge comic publishing industry.
Really?
Going all the way back to, you know, the Asterix comics.
Right.
And
well, in Valerian, when the U.S. edition or whatever that I read had all this introduction stuff about how, you know, it was clearly an inspiration for Star Wars and the same...
Star Wars is inspired by Valerian.
Yes. In fact, there were some specific things that were in the comics that he was like, and then he found out through a friend who had been working on Star Wars that, yeah, they all had his comics, you know, in...
Wow.
I've heard that Star Wars was based on many different...
The Fortress.
Things.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of different stuff that Star Wars is based on. It's not like Star Wars has ever been
shy.
Well,
there's one movie in particular that's almost a line-by-line retelling of a...
I think that's The Fortress.
Yeah.
Well, and so the other thing is that the artist who drew Valerian also worked with, I'm going to mess up his name, Luc Besson, the guy who did The Fifth Element.
That's right, Luc Besson.
Yeah, and he did some concept art for it, and then they postponed the movie, and meanwhile he came out with the issues that are reprinted in this Valerian trade, and one of them has a cabbie who drives this like flying cab, and you know, then Luc Besson came back and you know, said, oh, let's start this project again. Meanwhile, he read the comic and was like, hey, I want to put this cabbie in my movie, and they did.
Okay.
Well, one thing that I just watched today was watched and read is something that is available on iTunes right now as a free download, will be available for another week, and that is the first issue of Watchmen put out by DC Motion Comics, where it's the first issue of Watchmen, narrated, I'm not sure who it's narrated by, but then the artwork is kind of put into a Flash video sort of thing. It's really interesting. It's really cool.
But it's
cool.
The original art.
It's original art, and they've obviously done some modifications to it to get some of the visual effects out of it. But
they get Dr. Manhattan's hand that goes up and down like this.
It's not that bad. It's just like...
It's like South Park.
It's like you're looking at a panel of the comic... you still got the word balloons, and the word balloon, you know, they'll pan across the panel frame and zoom in and out of the panel frame, and parts of it will go out of focus as you zoom into a different part of the panel. But you can read it, and then there's a narration going over it. So it's basically just the same comic, only you're listening to it a little bit more. I'm reading this.
Sorry, they can't hear you as well.
They can hear me just fine. Can anybody not hear me? There, see, told you. The funny thing about it is that they've got credits. They talk about, who is the artist of Watchmen? Was it Dave Gibbons. I can't remember.
It might have been.
But he was a consultant on it. He's given credit to it. So as a colorist and everything. Nowhere in anywhere do you see Alan Moore's name.
Oh, yeah, of course not.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing about that, I was just going to say, like, you know, you know Alan Moore. Alan Moore is, like, you know, a household name in
mm-hmm.
terms of comics. But, yeah, it's weird how, like, the artists don't seem to get as much. And yet, they are far more, I think, you know, the ones responsible. Like,
for what?
For the comic. Like, I just kind of feel like...
For an Alan Moore comic?
Well,
okay,
so...
You haven't heard about
yes.
how Alan Moore... Even Warren
like
Ellis talked about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
he did. You're
yeah,
right. You're
where
right.
he will have 8 pages of descriptions for one panel.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
So
you think at some point he would just learn how to draw, you know? Why
yeah.
delegate it all?
Well, no, it's Frank Miller that's the artist
yeah.
that also draws his stuff sometimes.
Mm.
But he didn't draw Daredevil, did he?
No, when but he... No, but he drew Wolverine, written by Chris Claremont.
That's funny. You know, stuff that, like, Frank Miller is really known for, like his Daredevil
mm-hmm.
and for Dark Knight Returns, he didn't draw those.
No. Well, he drew... Or did he? Did he draw the second
Dark Knight Strikes Back?
Whatever it was called?
No.
Dark Knight Strikes Back.
It wasn't
really
called
the title.
Yeah, it is. It's Dark Knight Strikes Back.
That's
seriously.
Hilarious. Have you guys seen the Watchmen preview?
Yeah.
Yes.
It looks awesome.
That's pretty
I
cool.
Have not seen
you
it.
Know, I have to say that it...
It looks Hollywood.
It looks like it looks like a superhero movie. Like, people are watching this Watchmen trailer and creaming their shorts, and I'm just like, it looks like a superhero movie.
What would you rather it look like?
I don't know, but...
I mean,
I have not read Watchmen.
Oh, really?
Really?
What?
I started it. I actually got a little bored with it.
I have to admit,
well,
I don't love
ago?
It.
I started it last year.
Okay.
I got it from the library. I
well,
read
I've got the, trade
the first
try it again.
2 issues, I think, and
I do,
returned it.
I do think it's sort of in its entirety. It's a beginning
yeah.
to end story.
I didn't love it until the end.
I also saw the original issues at Dreamhaven for the cover price.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They didn't look like reprints either.
But as far as the trailer goes, I'm just like, you know, part of it is that I don't have an attachment to those characters. And so, to me, I recognize the characters from the first 2 issues I read in the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I could recognize some of the scenes that were from, like, the beginning of the trade that are in the trailer. But, again, right now, to me, it just kind of looks like a superhero movie.
Yeah,
because in my head, it's very noir. Like, very
oh,
gritty
sure.
and
oh,
dark.
Definitely.
And the movie is going to be as well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like.
You know, the fact that it's directed by the guy that did 300, you know, 300
yeah.
was a good movie, but it definitely wasn't great. It's fine. The microphone's over here. Marty's freaking out because
well,
I've got the laptop open in front of me.
You
I'm
cover your mouth.
I'm talking at the laptop.
Anyway, you know what preview looks terrible is The Spirit, directed by Frank Miller in his directorial debut.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think it looks interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of agree with Mike in this. I think it looks... I think it reminds me of the Spirit comics written by Will Eisner. The trailer does. It seems like
it reminds me of Sin City.
Sin City,
yeah.
Which, I mean, I...
Well, Sin City kind of created a new genre of filmmaking, almost.
Super stylized, to the
yeah.
point of, like, I just feel so detached.
Did you like Sin City?
Not really, no.
Oh,
all
yeah,
of...
I didn't really either.
Wow, I really liked Sin City.
Will Eisner, when he was doing the splash pages for The Spirit, all the splash pages were very... stylized, and they all worked the Spirit logo. There wasn't a Spirit logo because every issue the Spirit logo was different because it was somehow worked into the art. One that I really remember very distinctly was the Spirit in some Middle Eastern country, and you have the logo, and it's he's standing on top of the logo
and it's these Middle Eastern buildings that have the architecture of the Middle East, and he's, you know, looking down into these courtyards that are formed by the shapes of the letters. And it's kind of through that kind of thing that I'm reminded of when I watch the trailer. And it does remind me a little bit of Sin City in terms of the color usage and things like that. But it does remind me quite a bit of Eisner's art as well.
I guess I have absolutely no reference point really for that. I've never really
read
it.
Yeah, I've never read The Spirit.
But it was the running. That's what got me. Like, literally, like, had my hackles raised. The, like, running without gravity cutout kind of look.
Mm.
That I'm like, you know what? Just admit you're in a movie. This is not two-dimensional. Yeah.
It's based on a comic, though, which is two-dimensional.
Yeah, see, I think that's kind of a cool way of bringing the comic to life.
And you know, I haven't seen Sin City.
Really?
I mean to see Sin City, but I haven't seen it.
Come over and watch it.
I mean, I fully acknowledge that it's good. It's a good movie, one that I did not enjoy.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, and it's entirely possible, in fact, likely, that I would not enjoy Sin City the comic either. I've picked it up and flipped through it and was like, yep, not for me.
Yeah.
I could definitely say that. I'd say I haven't read Sin City the comic and don't have an urge to. Nor have I read 300 or have an urge to or most of Frank Miller's.
And I'm sure none of you guys have read any of the classic Spirit. You might have read. Did you read that one issue? No. I wrote about it, but you guys didn't read it.
No. I saw your review, but yeah.
Yeah. I read the whole classic Spirit series. Is coming out in DC Archive Editions, and they're $50
to coincide with the movie?
No, they've been coming out for the past, like, 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And,
waiting for the movie to come.
The libraries have some of them, but unfortunately, the library that seems to have the most of them is the Rochester Public Library.
Which is far away.
And I've been interlibrary loaning them, and it takes forever to get them, and you don't get to renew them. And, but it's interesting because these were written in the 40s, and there's a lot of stuff that is based on World War II, and, you know, you have a lot of ethnic stereotypes in there, and including his, partner, Ebony White, who is a very broadly painted black character, big lips and speech impediment and stuff. But that said, as the series progresses, Ebony's character gets very developed. He continues to look that way, which is a derogatory way. He continues to speak in a derogatory manner, but his character gets very fleshed out and saves the day more than once and becomes very valuable the Spirit, and it's interesting, you know, and a lot of people are like, oh my god, I can't read The Spirit because it's so racist and things like that, and you know, it's not a flattering first glance portrayal of a character, but if you read it, this character is a lot more savvy than a lot of the other characters. It's like in the movie Song of the South, the Disney one,
yes,
where the black characters who are, you know, the reason why Disney has never released it is because they're afraid there's going to be race riots because of the way the black characters are portrayed in it. Well, all these black characters are a lot smarter than all the dumbass white people in that movie. Anyways,
yes.
That's my little rant about The Spirit. Mm-hmm. So,
I was going to say before we had the little laptop being open problem, was about the Watchmen, and we were talking about who liked it and who didn't and everything. And not only did it win the Eisner Award for best finite series, it was the only graphic novel to have won a Hugo Award. And the only one listed in Time Magazine's 100 Greatest English Language Novels from 1923 to the present. Just so.
And I've heard all of that, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna be something that I enjoy. Neuromancer, I got so bored reading Neuromancer. And I bring that up because it's the comic that, or it's the novel that people are like, it's the first cyberpunk, and it's, you know.
Well, he coined the word cyberpunk.
Yeah, and I understand that. And
it was not the first cyberpunk novel.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it's the one that is kind of iconic.
Yes.
And that's why that's what I'm thinking about with The Watchmen, is that it's iconic. But then, you know, you read stuff that's come later that people have improved on the...
On the icons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree, actually. That's exactly... I could not get through Neuromancer for the same reason. It's like, you know, acknowledging that it was pivotal and important at the time, but now that I've read so many copycats that are better written...
Snow Crash.
You know, I really liked Snow Crash.
I think that they are good for... different reasons. I mean, I think most people would argue that Neuromancer was a better written... Well, I mean, it's almost like it's stylized in a way. Like, it's a more stylized, you know, novel than Snow Crash.
Hmm.
Snow Crash was kind of written in a style of jokes, in a way.
Yeah, I suppose... Snow Crash was definitely more amusing.
Yes. Yeah, it carried me through. Whereas Neuromancer was kind of, like, relentless and...
Isn't there a graphic novel
densely
of
written?
Neuromancer?
Oh my gosh. If there was, I would love to read it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that would help me. Because it
we
was
need
the pro
pictures.
Style. There should be a graphic novel of Snow Crash as well. That would be really fun.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the writing itself in Snow Crash is a really fun part of it, whereas Neuromancer, I felt like... I didn't like the style.
I would definitely agree with Florence with that.
See,
you know,
a lot of people would cite the writing style as part of what made Neuromancer the book that is so iconic. I mean,
really?
Yeah. His writing is very dense, and
it's
hard to read.
Yeah,
but
it really takes a lot of work to understand what the fuck he's talking about
at
any given moment.
Thick in a way that, you know,
we're
a lot
so
of foul
mouthed
like,
tonight. Dropping F bombs left and right.
Hanging out
with... Is this
with,
Rupa's influence?
Yeah,
almost for sure.
You know, that brings up a good question about when Mari said that Snow Crash should be made into a graphic novel. Do you think there are novels that would not work as a graphic novel or as a movie? And I'm talking mainly like fantasy, sci-fi, the stuff that normally lends itself to being adapted into other medias. Likewise, is there any comics that wouldn't work well as a movie, or any movies that wouldn't work well as a comic, that kind of stuff? Or can anything be adapted in any different way?
Well, I think every time you do an adaptation like that, you're essentially doing two things. One, you're going to create a new work that, you know, should not be judged on the merits of the old work.
You mean like The Ultimates?
And two... You are also creating a work that is derivative, and that, you know,
you don't get credit for the original.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking adaptations, not...
Yeah, they adapted it into a new comic.
Well,
yeah.
You don't get credit for how cool, the stuff that's cool in your new work that was also in the old work. So it's really tough to create a derivative work that is, you know, lauded as much as the original. You know, because it has to be
well.
That
I would
much
say, I would
on
say
its
the
own merits.
I would say the only way that that does happen is in the case of movies, and mostly because no one's
Lord of
most
the
people
biggest,
haven't read the book.
Biggest successes for that, I think, have been the movies, like Breakfast at Tiffany's, Anti-Mame.
Well, and the
and
thing about a movie is that it takes that
wands.
Much more effort to create a movie.
No, I don't know.
It
think
really
it takes. I don't know if it. It's because of that. It's because, number one, most people that have seen the movie haven't also read the book and don't have the basis of comparison.
I'd say that, depending on the movie,
and,
that I think is probably pretty true.
And it's such a completely different type of adaptation that it's almost a unique work in itself, because you have to translate something that is just in print and put visuals to it and interpret you know, everything from... the dialogue to the costume design to the setting to...
Well, and that's what I meant when I said it's a very different medium. I mean, it takes a lot more work to make a movie than it does to write a book. Somebody can sit down and in, you know, a year or so, they can write a novel by themselves. You cannot do that with a movie. I mean,
yeah, but
you
got more than
now,
one person working on a movie too. I would say that effort for the writer to write a book as it would be to write a screenplay. More of a collaboration in the movie then.
Yeah. And that's why it's so different. I mean, I just read the first two books in the Discworld series as comic books. And those were really good.
I didn't care for the art in those.
Are you going to read Ender's Game when it comes out?
As a comic?
Yeah.
I did not know it was
coming out this fall.
Really?
Yep.
Is it going to be individual issues?
Yes.
I'll probably wait for the trade.
It's put out by Marvel, yeah.
So, Neuromancer was put out by Marvel in 1989. It looks like it was just released as a one-shot. It was $6.95 at the time. I want to find it right now.
If you go to Marvel.com, I think the Ender's Game is on its front page.
Oh, yeah?
That and the new Dark Tower series that's coming up.
Yeah, I didn't keep up with the Dark Tower series.
No, I didn't either, and I wanted to. I should pick
it up. I know that the trade is out. I've seen it at the library, but I haven't picked it up.
They switched the banner to San Diego Comic-Con.
Well, that's right. That's going on this weekend, isn't it?
It's going on now.
Right now. We could be there,
it's like
but
a
we're week-long not.
Thing. War Machine ongoing series. We're looking at...
Why did we not go to San Diego Comic-Con? Because
you know
we like comics.
And not movies? You don't like movies?
You know,
what do you have
if
what's,
I go...
Well,
last time I go to a convention, I want it to be San Diego. Only because if I get sick at the convention, I can go to the beach.
You go to the zoo? You can see the pandas.
There's all kinds of things to do in
Take an
San
invasion.
Diego.
Inside the home invasion.
Not bite me, kitty.
Was that part of the podcast?
Yes. The cat bit me.
Rabies!
Ah!
Marty has rabies.
You notice Florence isn't here anymore. Did the cats take her?
Maybe. So anyway, we don't have to watch the cover or the front page of Marvel.com.
This is interesting, though.
I wonder if you said that Watchmen thing is on iTunes. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's on the DC site as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Huh.
It's just available as a free download from iTunes for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So get it now while you still can.
Well, should we wrap it up tonight?
We probably should wrap up.
An hour, 12 minutes, 17, 18, 19 seconds.
Do you want to just
keep
counting?
So clever. It's very hot in here, and I think
it's a little bit warm. We need to open a window. And with that,
we bid the adieu.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody who has commented on the site, and to Stevie D, who gave us an iTunes review.
You can end your fast now. Since we have now done the podcast again.
That's right. We won't take so long next time.
The riots can end.
Okay, well, this is Jason.
This is Mike.
Wait, Marty.
And Florence left. So
the cats have taken Florence.
Good night.
And good night.
Good luck.